All right, happy NFL Divisional Playoff Sunday to you guys. I spent my Sunday watching the Jazz defeat the Wizards, so 127-116. John, you saw the Skyhawks. Is that that's the Erie Skyhawks?
No. So it is the College Park Skyhawks, a new G League team. Atlanta's team was in Erie, and now they are in they're in College Park, which is basically one stop on the rental car shuttle from Atlanta Airport.
Well, good. Because, I mean, there's really, if you had to drive any further than that to see 21 turnovers in 30 minutes, you might be a little
By
upset.
the winning team. Yeah.
So they used to be in Erie, right? I at least had that part right.
So they're actually still in Erie. They're just now affiliated with the Pelicans instead of the Hawks. And the I forget how the transaction was done or whatever, but the Hawks have their own team now that plays in College Park. It's a really nice arena, actually. Like, it's probably the nicest arena in the G League. It's all brand new and stuff, but there was I don't have incredible things to say from the actual game. I didn't really see any NBA players on the court today.
Well, so let's talk about maybe some future NBA players. And
Sure.
joke as we might, you put the work in to go and see all these guys, scour the bushes, as it were. And so we're going to talk a little draft. Full disclosure here, I generally do not have much time to dig into the draft because I don't know. Do I just like, I must just sleep more than you, huh? Is that what my problem is?
No, I don't think so. I think you do more live shows and stuff than I do. I think
Okay.
that's what it is. You do more
Well,
podcasts than I do. That's what you're using all your time.
yeah. Well, that's true, but I don't write. Like, writing actually takes up a ton of time too, right? So I maybe I'm just being lazy. You're gonna have to, maybe I should be doing more college stuff. But so anyway, I don't get a chance to watch a ton of film. I usually lock in on the top 10 or so prospects once the first two rounds of the playoffs are done for draft purposes. But you obviously have been following these guys even well before this year, when you're with Memphis. Now you're keeping up with that as much as you can. So we're going to talk draft today, and I will just ask you some of the questions that I actually don't know the answers to, because I haven't seen as many of these guys. But obviously, I'm very curious to know how they fit into the NBA game. So let's start with this. Who do you see? And we'll do it here in your own mind right now, just your opinions rather than just, kind of what are you hearing? What is the consensus? But in your mind, who would you be considering for the number one pick in the draft this year?
Man, and this is a t so let's start at the really high level.
You're like, could I do the number four pick instead?
Exactly. This is not seen as a strong draft, particularly at the top. This is more like the year when, Andrew Bogut, say, was the number one pick, or I can't even remember his
2013.
name, Anthony Bennett, rather than there's no Anthony Davis, there's no Zion in this draft. I don't even know if there's a Ja Morant in this draft. And so I think a lot of decision makers are really scratching their heads. I think there are five or six players who are still at least somewhat in the mix as people do their work. And I think I have to watch this guy more because he's been playing overseas. But I think there's a case to be made for LaMelo Ball just because none of the other guys who are theoretically in the running have distinguished themselves. He's been pretty good down there and pretty good in a way that you hope would translate in terms of being like a high-level playmaker who can create shots for people. And his biggest weakness is shooting and physical strength, which are two of the things that are at least plausibly improvable upon.
Do you think his shot would need to be reworked to be viable at the NBA level?
I think that's certainly a possibility. New Orleans has done some stuff with Lonzo, and just even making it, you don't have to turn the guy into Ray Allen, but if you can just make him a threat from out there, that opens up so much of his game, right?
Yeah. Well, so I mean, just real quickly, 30 seconds, like strengths and weaknesses on him as of now.
Yeah, I think obviously the ability to handle the ball and distribute is the thing that attracts teams the most. I think there's going to be some questions and some research into the background on him. Does he care about playing defense? Is he, you know, there's the whole sideshow with LeVar and everything that happened in Lithuania. People are going to do their digging on that. But at the end of the day, it's a talent league. And I think he's probably, if you're making that list right now, probably the most talented guy, certainly the, say, 18, 19-year-olds. And I think that there's a good chance that ends up winning the day.
Yeah. And I mean, from what little I've seen, the vision does seem to be pretty special there. And that's really like the bread and butter skill as you see it for him.
Yeah. And that, you know, this is January and we reserve the right to change our minds, obviously. But I do think like just the ability to create shots and create shots for other people is so important in this league. And he has that.
Where would you put him in comparison to some of the other guys who've been drafted at the point guard position these last few years, as we viewed them as prospects coming in?
Right. I mean, certainly I wouldn't put him on Ja Morant's level. You know, is he on Lonzo's level? I mean, people were pretty excited about Lonzo. People felt pretty strongly that he was the number two guy in that draft, or number three at worst. And there weren't as many of the reservations about the rest of the class as there was with this one. And so I wouldn't say he's quite on that level. I'm trying to think who are some of the other guys, you know.
Yeah, De'Aaron Fox, Trey Young, Dennis Smith was probably a little bit below those guys in terms of perception.
Yeah, you know, Darius Garland, De'Aaron Fox, maybe. Fox might be a good one.
Yeah.
People still had some questions about Fox when he came out, but they generally liked him, and he went four.
I'm going to be trying when I get down to evaluate him to just avoid making the comparisons between him and his brother. Like, that's good, to just try to not let that come in. And it's hard because they both have this funky shooting form. They both love taking these deep threes. They both, you know, they're raised by the same man with the same kind of philosophy. Yeah. So it's hard to avoid that getting in there.
And they look like each other, obviously. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, similar size. So probably pretty similar athleticism, wouldn't you say?
Yeah. As near as I can tell. Like, I got to dig into some more of that, that Australian tape.
All right. So would you have him above anyone else as of right now, or are there others that would be in the mix for you at this point in time?
Boy, everyone you try to talk yourself into being in the mix at number one, just there's just so many question marks and failures at the NCAA level, I guess. I mean, when you look at Anthony Edwards, James Wiseman, Cole Anthony, I just don't see how you can talk yourself into those guys. There's some good Euros who I think are probably late lottery guys. I don't think you talk yourself into any of them at number one. You know, RJ Hampton is playing in the same league and hasn't been nearly as dynamic. I don't see how he leapfrogs Ball. So it's a hard sell. I mean, Edwards is the guy who's probably put out there more as the number one pick just because of his physical tools. But watching him actually play, man, there's some troubling stuff there.
Yeah, well, from what I understand, I didn't see the game, but you were there yesterday.
I wasn't there for the Auburn game, but I was for the previous game against Kentucky.
Oh, okay.
I watched the Auburn game, but I was not there.
When you say the physical tools, what are those? Like, what is the thing that gets you into him as a prospect to begin with before you kind of then get disappointed by the other stuff, I guess?
He's built like a tank. He can jump. He can make very quick moves to get into his jump shot. Gets very good elevation on his jump shot. Can seemingly get it off anytime he wants. And when he does put the ball on the floor and drive, I think he, you know, is able to, in a straight line, get where he's going very quickly. So there's a lot to build off there, and you can sort of talk yourself into him being Mitch Richmond from there.
Jump shot looks good, or is it going to need some refinement?
Okay. It's, yeah. You know, he's hasn't been a good foul shooter. His form actually looks a little different on his foul shot than it does on his off the dribble jump shot. It's more of a catapult, it looks like, on the on the jump shot off the dribble. You know, when a guy shoots off the shoulder and gets, you know, it gets a little more arc on it, and then yeah. he's kind of straight out in front of his forehead when he's at the free throw line or even on some of his catch and shoots. So and you watch him even in warmups, it looks okay, but it doesn't go in as much as you would think. So I, you know, and there's stuff there when you talk to people where they'll say, well, he hasn't played that long. He was mainly playing football apparently. And doesn't have nearly as much kind of high level experience as some of the other 18 year olds that come into the NCAA now in terms of these high level AAU competitions and whatnot. And so that he's on a different spot on the curve than some of these other guys have been when they came in. And I think, you know, I'll buy that to an extent, but so like his instincts for the game are really bad right now. I don't know how else to put it. Like just in terms of just having a nose for the ball and instincts and defensively is just awful. And he shouldn't be awful, right? Like with his physical tools, he should at least be okay. And right now he's not. So I think there's a lot of concerns there. I think, you know, if you are picking him, you're picking him as like for 4 and 5. It's weird to see like a two guard who's a, you know, if he makes it, is going to be like a 3-point shooting / scoring weapon as a project. But he kind of is in some ways. There's a lot of things he has to get better at.
Does he play hard?
Yeah. I'd go more toward no on that. Like There's just so many points where he's disengaged, and I think again I say instincts for the game. Like maybe his motor just doesn't run hot enough. But you don't see him moving without the ball that much, and you don't see him defensively. Like he'll kind of jog back a lot of times. Like it's kind of troubling.
Yeah, I mean, is there anyone that you would compare him to? I know this is kind of a dangerous game for those, just kind of more from a style standpoint of those.
I brought up Mitch Richmond because yeah. he's kind of got this great body for a two guard and is a jump shooter and is probably going to make his living that way. You wish he'd put it on the floor and drive more because I think he can be really effective when he just puts his head down and go to the rim just because he's so powerful. Had even in the Auburn game where he wasn't very good overall, had a really nice left-handed drive and finish. But yeah, you just want to see him do that more, and he kind of settles a lot for the one dribble jump shot.
All right, we'll take a quick break here, and then we'll talk a little James Wiseman. Plus, we also want to hit on the players in this draft that John is higher or lower on than the consensus, where we, or at least he sees the log jam in the mid lottery at point guard shaping out. A lot of other stuff to get to in just a sec here. So I'm going to be honest with you guys. I don't have the absolute highest level of motivation when it comes to fitness. I've been working out for like 20 years now. I've been doing a lot of the same things to exercise. It gets a little old. So that's where the connected fitness revolution comes in. And Echelon is the best product that I know. Their EX1 connected fitness bikes offer a high quality at-home cycling experience for less than half the price of a Peloton. You do not have to pay a ton for a Peloton. Echelon bikes are under $1,000, and they've got this limited time free Apple iPad offer. Their bikes can be used with your smart device. That's part of what that iPad is for. Or they also offer them with a built-in screen. They've got 24/7 live and on-demand classes. This is just such a high-quality bike. It's not like those ones at the gym. I think they're called like recombinant bikes or something, where you just sit there. There's no variation in the effort level. These ones, you can really get out of the saddle, push yourself, and these awesome classes can get you to do that. Whether you're a busy parent, you're a first responder, elite athlete, whatever your activity level is, Echelon is right for you. And if you aren't 100% satisfied, they'll even give you your money back. Go to Echelon, E-C-H-E-L-O-N, as in upper echelon, echelonfit.com/LONBA for Locked On NBA. Echelonfit.com/LONBA. You can learn about that limited time, free Apple iPad, and complete details of their exclusive offer. Echelon, it's your time. As I mentioned with John, divisional playoff weekend. If you're the type of fan that knows football, that you think you can choose any game and call it, MyBookie is the place for you. They let you turn your sports knowledge into cash in your wallet with the promo code LOCKEDONNBA. You will get half deposit matching. So you deposit $2,000, you get an extra $1,000 in free money to play with. That's mybookie.ag. At mybookie.ag, no one gives you more ways to win. You can get in on the action, enjoy the games in a totally new way. If you like to bet a little to win a lot, try a parlay, betting multiple games together for a much bigger payout. Just don't forget to use that promo code LOCKEDONNBA to let them know that you came from us, number one. And number two, to get that halfway deposit matching. MyBookie.ag is the URL. Once again, MyBookie.ag, promo code LOCKEDONNBA. You play, you win, you get paid. James Wiseman, I did get a chance to see a fair amount of him at the Nike Hoop Summit last year. So
I'd be interested in your thoughts, because NBA personnel were not allowed into those practices that you went to.
Yeah, no, that's true. I mean, so for those who don't know the way the Nike Hoop Summit works, if you're on the world team, which, you know, hilariously, the world team is made up of like mostly guys who went to high school in the U.S. at this point, like Nico Mannion was on that team, like the Canadian guys are on that team. A totally artificial distinction, but NBA personnel are allowed in to see all of those practices. But if you're on the USA basketball team, they're only allowed in for this one scrimmage against the Portland Generals. Shout out Marshall Cho doing a nice job for putting together that team every year. But that team usually has some talent, like Jaden McDaniels played on that in a couple of years. Steve Blake.
Peyton Pritchard as a high schooler played 2 years in a row.
They actually retired his jersey for that team. the first ever. But there's also just kind of some guys who like went to college in the area and are around, or guys who go to like Portland State or whatever. But anyway, that's too inside basketball, not inside baseball. But to me, I thought that he does have some game-changing defensive tools, that he can move his feet pretty well and guard guys. I thought in some of those scrimmages, he did a really nice job staying with Jaden McDaniels, for example. He's not the fastest guy with the ball in his hands, but you know, I think if you want to say, could he switch out onto some bigger wings at times, I think he could do that. He came across the lane for some blocks. He was covering some ground pretty well on his shot blocks, I thought. And certainly from what people told me about him, you know, that was at times the best that he looked defensively, where he was really playing a little bit harder. And so I think he does have that ability. Am I going to say it will happen for sure? You know, I can't get to that point. You know, if you're going to compare him to like where Rudy Gobert was at the same age, you know, he's not at that level to me. But I guess I saw Gobert for the first time when he was maybe 20 instead of 18. But so that was one thing. I think he has the ability to do that. But from some of the things that you hear about his makeup, you know, I'm not sure that he gets it. But I think it's physically, I believe he has what you would want to be a game changer defensively at that position. What do you think?
Yeah. So you see him go through the layup line once and you're like, okay, he's in my top 15, right? Right. Like just right. Off of that.
I mean, whenever I show up to the Hoop Summit, I'm like, you know, you hear about who these guys are, but I haven't seen a lot of them yet. And so, maybe I've read about him a little bit. And you're like, you see him, you're like, okay, that's that guy. You know, mm-hmm. When they just stick out physically, and someone's like, oh yeah, there's this awesome center named James Wiseman, and he showed up, and you're like, oh yeah, that's him. Like you can tell the physical characteristics are outstanding for even an NBA center.
Yeah, yeah, I think the concerns with him are, like you said, like the guy he actually reminds me of a lot is Hassan Whiteside, where there's a lot of physical tools, but the it's just not there every night. Like you could see in the Oregon game that I saw him in, he just wasn't engaged at all the entire game. And he has offensively, he has some things. I don't know. Like, he has some touch. I could see it developing to where he can become like a little bit of a pick and pop guy, even though he hasn't shot it well yet. You watch him shoot like it's projectable. Obviously, his size and length, he should be able to score some on lobs. But then you get in this whole other debate when you talk about Wiseman, which, should you be drafting centers at all?
Right.
And I think this was a philosophical thing that we got into my last couple of years with the Grizzlies, especially, where because you can fill those positions relatively inexpensively, if somebody doesn't have really high star potential, then it's probably not worth taking a draft pick on them unless the value proposition is just absurd at that point in the draft, which I suppose is capable of happening.
Well, you guys did take Jaren Jackson there. I think Jackson is a little bit different of a player, right? You weren't necessarily drafting him to be this dominant offensive force. He's going to space the floor. He could block shots. He could move his feet defensively. And I do think like that Wiseman, I'm actually more concerned about him offensively than defensively. I think I would be surprised, as long as he tries, if he weren't like pretty darn good defensively. But I don't really care for his abilities finishing around the rim when it's not a dunk. You know, he's mm-hmm. extremely left-handed. He's not really good at powering up. He doesn't, despite having what looks like an NBA body, at this point in time, he wasn't able to really like power up and go through guys. And this is against other 18-year-olds as well. So it's not he can grow into that. He can get stronger. You know, he's got a little face the basket game. Like, he hit like a step back jumper at one point in the scrimmages. And he could definitely jump. He could definitely be a lob threat. But I'm just not sure, unless he is, I don't see him being, you know, much more than kind of like an above average offensive center. If you're going to throw it to him in the post, I don't see him being a dominating post up weapon. I don't see like the great feel. I don't see him being a good enough shooting threat to really be just, you know, a Miles Turner, Jaren Jackson type of guy. So to me, then he's got to be that unbelievable defensive player. And so you've got a lot riding on that now.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, some of that is just, you know, how people are wired too. I mean, the defensive end, that's a lot of what goes into it. And that's where you start hearing questions about Wiseman. So I think it's, you know, we're ripping on the draft and the quality of it. I mean, if you think he's a legit starting center, then there's a point here where he becomes worth it. Is that point at the 2-3-4 spot in the draft? I'm not sure.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's not a lot of competition, I guess, is what it comes down to. So, and I do think, and this is something that might come up a little bit too, especially for Golden State, I think in a lot of ways, young bigs can actually contribute earlier than young perimeter players, in particular young wings, who really seem to take a long way to develop. Whereas, at least as a rebounder, as a shot blocker, you know, especially if you're playing next to like a Draymond Green or something, if you're Golden State, maybe you could say we'll bring him in and he'll give us some athleticism and transition. And then, you know, if we don't play him at the end of the game in his first couple of years, so be it. I don't know. That's just maybe one school of thought.
You're just saying that because you've seen Jacob Evans and Jordan Poole the last 2 years.
Well, I think like Ethan Strauss wrote a comment on this. I thought it was interesting. If you really go back and look at Kawhi or Brandon Ingram this year,
yeah.
And, you know, it's rare, I think, for a wing, even like, you know, a Jason Tatum or Jaylen Brown, it's weird for wings to come in and really contribute right away. Now, maybe you can say, hey, they can contribute 3-and-D early and then they develop into stars later on. But I don't even see who that guy is in this draft either. So,
So this would be more like maybe he comes in and he gives you like what Jared Allen did right away, and then you can build off of that. Yeah, that's fair.
But anyway, I want to ask you just who has like impressed you that you haven't heard other guys talking about in this draft?
Well,
they talk about everyone, but you're higher on, I should say.
Yeah, yeah. So I'll start with one guy because – I think Tyrese Maxey has gotten a lot of the attention at Kentucky, and I like him. I think he's definitely a lottery pick. I think the guy who in the maybe 18 to 25 range, who I think is going to end up providing a lot of value, is Ashton Hagans from Kentucky. he's a guy who didn't have a great freshman year, has been a lot better as a sophomore, really good defensive player, rebounds well for a guard, very active, gets his hands on balls, gets steals, good passer. His weakness is his shooting, which has gotten better, and I think is still projectable to get better from here. I mean, he's 81% from the line this year. Even last year, he was 76. 29% career three-point shooter, so that's definitely something that has to work on. And can be a little wild on the ball, a little turnover prone. But I think he's a good, productive player. I think he plays really hard. I think he's somebody that teams will be really happy to have on their team, and could come in, be a backup right away with his defense, and then you hope he develops offensively to the point that he can be a starter a couple years down the line.
Yeah, it's kind of like a DeAnthony Melton type. Is that sort of the archetype for him?
A little bit. I mean, he's much more of a pure one than Melton, but oh, okay. Same kind of idea. Yeah.
All right, who else?
Don't hear a lot of people talking about Paul Reed from DePaul. He's another guy who I think is going to be an absolute beast on the defensive end. More probably offensive questions with him in terms of where he fits in positionally. He's probably like a 3-4, 4-3. I think he can guard every position on the court. It's so trite now to compare people to Draymond, right? But he's really long and could really move his feet on defense. He's really active with his hands and he knows what he's doing on that end. He's just really good. And he's... offensively, he's okay. You know, he's a junior, so he's a little bit older player. Doesn't shoot the ball great. 32% from three for his career, 27 this year. You know, decent foul shooter like with Hagans, you know, 80% this year. Outstanding rebounder, can make plays and dunks around the rim, you know, in transition and stuff. Can put it on the floor a little bit. His offensive game is definitely going to be the question mark here, but I think his defensive potential is really high. And I've seen him projected in like the second round. And I mean, in this draft, like I think he should be going way higher than that.
I'm just glad that you mentioned DePaul for the first time anyone has ever mentioned DePaul in 15 years as a Chicago guy.
Yeah, there were little snippets. There was the whole, you know, there was like Wilson Chandler's draft year, right?
That had to get mentioned once or twice. 2006, right? So that's what I had in mind. That's sad as it is to say.
Has it been that long?
Yeah. I think I can't remember. Maybe you might have been like 2008 or something, but it's been some time. And it's not like they were any good then with him anyway. So, no, I mean, you have to go back to like the Quentin Richardson, Lance Williams, Bobby Simmons team that they were even remotely relevant. Okay, give me one more.
Devin Vassell from Florida State. Wing player, skinny, but he didn't play that much last year. It was interesting. I was at the Virginia Tech Florida State game last year, and they brought him in off the bench. You know, just freshman checks in, whatever. Nikhil Alexander goes for a pull up jump shot, and this dude spikes it. And I'm like, whoa, who was that guy? So you know, it's just one of those moments where you're like, well, whoa, okay. You know, you start flipping through your program, like, wait a minute, what's this guy's deal? He's playing as a starter this year now. I would say his defensive tools again are really good, even though he's got a skinny body. He's got long arms, moves well. Okay on the ball, not great. Good outside shooter, though. 40% from three for his career at Florida State. You know, he can move the ball a little, make decisions. Again, not like a true on-the-ball player at this point, but pretty good physical tools with his size and his length, and I think his body will fill out. And I think he's the type of guy who can be... you know, let's say like a Caris LeVert type where you pick him in that 15 to 25 range and he becomes, you know, 2-3 years down the line, he can become a starting wing for you.
Anyone that you're maybe a little lower on than some people? I mean, I realize this isn't the greatest draft, so maybe everyone's low on everyone.
It's like shooting fish in a barrel, right?
But yeah, I mean, you know, I'm sure you read the mock drafts, whether The Athletic or ESPN or anywhere else. Anyone that people seem to be relatively high on that you don't necessarily see it for?
Well, so we already talked about Anthony Edwards. You know, I saw Vernon Carey from Duke this week, and
I saw him at the Hoop Summit. I mean, he's he's like Caleb Swanigan 2.0.
Yeah, exactly.
In terms of his like fit in the NBA. Maybe he's a little more athletic than him, but
yeah, so he has monstrous stats as a freshman. But the thing that troubled me in that game was that Georgia Tech's James Banks kept going over him for rebounds and around the basket and getting his hands on balls. Like, Carey would box him out, and it wouldn't matter. Banks would still get the ball. Like, Duke got mashed on the offensive boards that game. And they, you know, they were able to win because they had more talent, basically, than Georgia Tech does. But, they, you know, and this is like a low-tier ACC team. Like, James Banks is an okay ACC center, you know? And so that was troubling to see his athleticism get exposed even at that level. You know, in college, they keep him near the rim. He's a good finisher with his left hand, obviously, and is statistically extremely productive and efficient. I just don't know how any of that translates to the next level.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he's, if you're going to just post up, I mean, wasn't a believer in his jump shot when I saw him at the Hoop Summit, although he seemed to enjoy taking it. But yeah, I mean, bigs who aren't absolutely elite offensively and guys that you can really go to as a force and run your offense through, which I don't think he projects as that. And then defensively, it's hard to see how he's not below average. So
yeah, I mean, exactly. You know,
can he be a backup big for someone to come in and like do a low grade Enes Kanter impression? Like, maybe, but you know, that's, I mean, I don't
you need
know
to draft that in the first round. Yeah. You know, you could say the words Isaiah Stewart and probably get the same result.
Yeah, I think Stewart, to me, I thought he provides a little bit more in the floor game, though, where he and I think it, I liked his jumper even slightly more, too. And I think he's got a little more pop, just it moves his feet a little bit better, like plays hard. I think that he brought a little bit more just in his overall game to me. And again, I'm basing this on a week, so let's not go crazy here. But he was at the Hoop Summit also, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, from watching on TV, I think that's probably true. I think he does definitely have a little more kind of perimeter touch kind of ability to him. So, well, it's going to be really interesting to see where those two guys end up getting drafted, because I think, you know, the mocks have had him in the first. I mean, Stewart was really high coming into the year. Now it's cooled off a little, and yeah. I'm not sure that's where they go. Okay, another guy I want to talk about because you saw him in the Hoop Summit. Precious Achiuwa.
Yeah, you know, he had an awesome week there, and he was playing for the world team, so you guys got a little bit more of a chance to see him as well. My recollection of him was that he was extremely bad shot, mid-range heavy, but they happened to go in that week, but that his physical tools were pretty much impeccable as far as, you know, a combo forward.
Yeah, and I think that's the question is, what is he going to be at the offensive end? Are his offensive instinct, because he just puts the ball down and shoots it basically, and so are his instincts at that end gonna refine enough? He's already an older player for a one and done, so is the clock's working against him a little bit? And you know, can he get to that point where he can be a functional part of the offense when he's not just grabbing it and shooting it? And I don't know. I go back and forth on him. I didn't have him like on my hate list, but I didn't have him on my love list either. I think he's a guy who's confused me a little. I think he's been a little all over the place on draft boards. So I think other people are scratching their heads asking the same kind of questions. And then he's not playing in a great league this year. So it's going to be interesting to see how that evolves too. And he's actually playing five now with Wiseman out for the year for Memphis. So I don't know if we're going to learn everything we want to learn about him this year.
To me, he's one of these guys where, like, he goes to a historically bad organization, and you're like, well, that's it for his career. Mm-hmm. And he goes to San Antonio, and you're like, yeah, you know what? He's not going to play for a year and a half. And then all of a sudden, he's going to, like, get coached into what he needs to do, figure it out, and they'll harness his athleticism and take all the bad stuff out of his game. And all of a sudden, he's like a really, really solid role player.
Yeah, I mean, you know, where these guys end up matters a lot. So definitely, I mean, he could be one of them.
Yeah, or like a Miami or something. These teams that are just have succeeded with guys, you would think, oh, well, like this is great raw clay to be molded. But he has a lot of bad habits right now, and not a ton of feel. And so you would have to probably convince him that, hey, you know, these are the things that you do well. Do these things.
Yeah. I mean, if you can at least get his feel to a certain point, then maybe he can at least be Harrison Barnes, you know, like where he's, yeah. You know, which is like a useful NBA player, right?
All right, let's take a quick break and talk about these point guards here. Mm-hmm. So there's this group of guys, you can tell me if I'm missing anyone here, but Nico Mannion, Cole Anthony, and you throw RJ Hampton into that list, Tyrese Maxey, Tyrese Halliburton, maybe Ball is a little bit above them. A couple of guys overseas that you could throw into this group as well. Who do you like? Who do you not like out of that point guard group? All guys are kind of projected to go in maybe the 4 to 12 range right now.
Yeah, and it's going to be interesting because you made a really interesting point when we were talking ahead of the show about how there's a lot of teams that project to be picking in that range that don't necessarily need a point guard. So we could see some interesting stuff on draft night because of that. But we're getting ahead of ourselves. Who do we like first? Who's good? Well, this is actually a group of players that I generally kind of like. But of them, I like Tyrese Halliburton the best. I've seen him the most. I saw a bunch of Iowa State last year. They're not as good this year, but he's really stepped up his role offensively, which was the biggest concern about him a year ago. Good passer, good shooter with his feet set. Good athlete, good size for the position, sees the floor really well. Biggest concern is just offensively him getting into his jump shot, which is a push shot with a little bit of a slow windup. Can he shoot that shot off the dribble? Is he going to be effective in like a half-court pick-and-roll game when he has to do that? So I understand those questions, but from a productivity standpoint, and you look at his defense and his other tools, and the fact that he keeps getting better, I just think he's a guy that you want to bet on. And so I would place him other than I'll separate LaMelo, but I'll put him at the top of this group. There's another guy in here that we haven't talked about who I think is kind of a sleeper right now. I don't think he's going to be a sleeper if he keeps playing well, but Killian Hayes, the yeah. French point guard who's playing in Europe. Unlike some of these other European prospects this year, he's playing pretty well in a pretty good league as an 18-year-old. And the guys who are able to do that, the fail rate on them is really low. And so I think he's a guy you have to take a really hard look at. I saw him actually in Charlotte last year at Basketball Without Borders. He wasn't great there. He's a really good foul shooter, but it hasn't translated to his three-point shot for some reason. And he's not like a super athlete, so he has to do it a little more with craftiness. But he has good size for a point guard, and he's another guy who's continuing to improve, which I think is matters. It's important. And so I think he's a guy that teams are going to be studying really hard in the second half of this year. A lot of teams make their trips to Europe in April, May, you know, especially the lottery teams after their seasons are over. I think they're going to be looking at him really closely.
So here's my question. I probably don't have time to go through all these guys here, but are any of these guys, here's probably the way to do this. Here are the teams. I'm just going to read the 538 reverse standings for you, and we'll see who needs a point guard of mm-hmm. these teams in theory. Knicks, definitely. Hawks, mm-hmm. no. Cavs just took 2 point guards in a row.
Yeah.
Warriors, in theory, probably not. Hornets, I mean, probably their two best players are point guards, but they, yep. you could say maybe they'd need another one.
That's, maybe. That's they kind of need everything. Right? They could trade Rozier, too.
Sure. You know? Pistons, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Wizards, probably. I mean, who knows where they're thinking of John Wall. I mean, he will be on the team probably for a while.
Yeah, he'll be on the team for a while, but I think if the best player available was a point guard, they would take a point guard.
Yeah. Bulls just took a point guard in the lottery last year Kobe White. Spurs got two on the team already, and now you're getting into, you know, Suns maybe would. Kings have De'Aaron Fox. Grizzlies aren't going to need anyone. Wolves, yes. So, you know, maybe four of these teams you could say need a point guard, and then maybe there's like three more that have people they've drafted but maybe wouldn't be in love with them. So question number one is, do you think any of these guys are, you know, if you're the Cavs or the Hornets. Would you draft another point guard over the top of these guys that you already have based on how good these guys are? Are you going to try and move the pick if, you know, those are the, because it seems like you've got this run where most of the players available are point guards.
Yeah, this is one of the really hard questions you have to deal with as a franchise, because you don't want to eat your young, but you do want to make sure in the draft that you do get the best player available. And sometimes that involves drafting the same position as another player that's already on your team. Cleveland has enough invested in Sexton and Garland that, boy, to take a third one, I think that would be really unlikely. I think it's a little easy.
You could sell them on the, oh, these guys can play together when there's two of them. When there's three, it's like, well, one of you guys is going to be the odd man out. I don't mind that approach personally, just because, you know, look, the draft picks don't work out a lot of the times, and I don't think either of those guys have been like, oh, this is our future long-term starter at the position for sure. I've shown enough yet. We'll see by the end of the year, maybe.
Yeah, exactly. And I still think, though, with Cleveland, the odds are you're looking at a combined probability that at least one of them becomes that guy, which I still think is probably pretty decent. So yeah. I think they're probably going a different direction. I think for Charlotte, it's easier. Rozier is a veteran. There's 2 years left on his deal. He's probably tradable even right now. You know, Devontae Graham, as good as he's been, might even be better off the ball and will be a restricted free agent a year from now. I just think there's more questions in the future, I guess, for Charlotte, and they have more of a talent need immediately, where I think that's a direction they'd have to look at. If that was the best player on their board, I think that's what they should do.
Yeah, and I think we might see some trading action in that area too, depending on how the lottery shakes out. You know, if the Wolves have the 13th pick and they really need a point guard and they like someone who's available at five, maybe if you're the Cavaliers or the Hornets, you're okay going back to 13 and picking up maybe another pick later or something like that. Because there are teams, you know, even maybe who are, you know, if you're, say, the Magic, for example, right? You know, maybe you move up from 15 or 16 to 9 and try to get your point guard of the future. Maybe those type of transactions we might see.
Yeah. Yeah. I think this is probably a good draft for that because it is so heavy at one position in right in that range. At least that's how it appears right now. We'll see how this board shakes out, you know, as the year goes on.
Yeah, or maybe you say, hey, these guys aren't going to take a point guard. We'll just wait around here and we'll hope that the guy we want
falls
to us.
You know, that's one of the things that we always talked about is, you know, if you let the draft come to you, usually something good will land there. Sometimes you don't necessarily have to burn your assets trading up just to get it. But there are other times where it's definitely worthwhile, where you see a big drop-off, and that's where, you know, internally on the team side, I mean, we do mock drafts. We'll sit around and have a different person be a different team, you know, or like we'll give you, you know, I'll take three teams and some other guy will take three teams, and we'll sit around and kind of mock it out just to kind of get a feel for what might happen.
Yeah, like does the guy who plays a certain team, does he like just have a couple of shots beforehand just to realistically simulate things?
We never actually had the liquor on hand. It would be simulated drunkenness.
Yeah. All right, we got to rule some more out of the playoffs here. I still got Hall of Journeys to get to, but let's make sure we don't forget about this time. Last week, you ruled out the Detroit Pistons.
Yes.
As your seventh team, I'm going to dispense with the suspense. And I'm going to rule out the Detroit Pistons as well. Blake Griffin had his season-ending surgery, and they just seem to be moving in a different direction at this point. It was a struggle for me. There's some other teams that I was thinking very seriously about that shall remain nameless for now. But in the absence of – and so the only difference you and I have so far is I ruled out Charlotte back on December 29th. You've yet to rule them out. Are you going to go there or – are you going to go with another team to rule out of the playoffs?
Before I announce my team, I should mention that our elimination concept is already in peril.
The sphincters are tightening.
As the Grizzlies are currently sit eighth in the West, their schedule will get significantly harder at the end of the month. 538 projects them with an 8% chance of actually making the postseason. But, you know, it's we might have jumped the gun a little early on them. They've been looking pretty good lately. We'll see. But
yeah, 115 offensive rating over the last month.
Yeah, which is crazy. I mean, I saw them in person hang 140 on the Clippers in a road game, and they're just they're shooting the ball well, and they've really gotten the chemistry between Ja Morant and Jaren Jackson on that pick and pop is much tighter than it was at the beginning of the year. Surely you would think they would cool off at some point, but you know, it doesn't take a whole lot of winning to get you in the postseason in the West, though. So, you know, they don't have to play that well to get in.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the thing. They're playing really well right now, too, compared to early in the year. I mean, I know their overall season-long numbers are not great, but, I mean, they've, like, had some unstoppable-looking games. I mean, against the Spurs the other night, too, they just completely waxed them. Yeah, so that'll be a little embarrassing. If they do make it, let the record show that I was ruled to pick them third, and you picked them fifth, so
yes.
you have a slight advantage there. Although that might have been, I think that was during the week that we each picked three teams in a row. So I think we actually picked them on the same date to be out. But
is that right?
Yeah.
Huh. You might be right. Yeah. Huh.
Okay. Right.
Well, let's see if I do better here. I am going to knock out the Charlotte Hornets. It's been a good run. You've been awesome in close games, and you're 15-26. So I'm going to go ahead and say they're the team that I will eliminate. And I just don't see, even with Brooklyn struggling, I just don't see it happen. I don't see them catching those guys. So they're my pick today.
And Kyrie is back and playing as we record this. All right, another quick break, and I'll ask John another question about his time with the Grizz. So this is a question that I've had for a long time, and you always hear, oh, NBA teams don't practice. Practice doesn't matter. Once they get into the season, it's the games that count. They're just walking through stuff. So what I wanted to ask about is, for guys who aren't necessarily, you know, one of your top five, top seven players who aren't getting 20 minutes a night, how do they approach practice? How does the team approach practice for them? How much are you evaluating what they're doing in practice as far as your own internal evaluation of that player?
I think you have to evaluate what they're doing in practice, because those are the data points you're being given. You don't have a whole lot else to work with if they're not playing in the games. But you can learn a lot from watching them, even in the five-on-five, you know, scrimmages, you know, when your real players are mixed in, which is only some practices during the course of the year. But even when they play what they call small-sided games, like 3-on-3 or whatever, you watch them then and you evaluate. And, you know, it helps that we have the G League now, so we can at least see more game action for most of these guys. But It's interesting. I mean, I think it's actually for the other players too. When they play against these guys in practice, sometimes they'll get an impression too. Like we knew we had something with Jamichael Green. I'll use him as an example almost right away, because he came in and then we had our first couple practices right out of the All-Star break, and he was flying all over the place. And even the players were like, "Hey, like this guy has a chance. Like this guy's pretty good." And so, you definitely use that information, and then also there are different times where we take data from all the practice too and use that as an evaluation tool. Now that happens more probably in training camp, but you're able to use that information and distill it and kind of get an idea of who's performing and who is not. You know, it's interesting though, because obviously for the players who are playing 30 minutes a night, they practice at one speed, and the guys who are trying to establish themselves practice at a different speed, because they have to. And so there is some triangulation with that where you understand that, okay, like Mike Conley isn't going to be driving in the paint much during practice because he's just taking unnecessary hits that he doesn't need to. So that's not a reflection of him as a player. That's a smart strategy, right? So yeah. you understand that with those players. And for that reason, you don't watch them in practice as much as you watch these second line guys, you know, when you're working in the front office, because those are the ones you're really trying to evaluate. And a lot of times you have quicker evaluation deadlines with those guys too, whether they're on a 10-day or a partial guarantee or 1-year deal or whatever. So you're trying to really use that time to help that evaluation along. And then the other thing is that practice has to be different for those players because they need to get more work in to offset the fact that they're not playing in the games, like just from a conditioning level and sure. from maintaining their skill and their touch. So you're running them through more things, whether it's like those 3-on-3 games after everyone else is done, or putting them through more and different drills, or grabbing them. Sometimes they do their work before practice, actually, with the development coaches. You know, every team does it a little differently, but it does matter quite a bit for these guys, and it matters from the team side. It is something that's always been, at least in my time in the Grizzlies, was important as an evaluation tool to understand what is happening with these guys.
You mentioned that Conley thing, and you know, I always think of like the QB wearing the red jersey in football practices too. In 16-17, Dwayne Wade joined the Bulls, and I think about halfway through the year, there are some quotes like that the young players like really wanted him to practice more, contribute more in practice to like help them get better, help the team get better. You know, he obviously was a vet at that time, was trying to preserve his knees. What was your reaction when you heard those stories?
You know, I don't know if that registered with me at all because we were so locked into what we were doing.
Because that was just some bullshit media stuff that only I would be paying attention to.
Well, not even that. We just didn't care about the Bulls. I mean, that's, you know, okay. That's life.
Well,
on the
well
team
what's
side.
What's your reaction here in that as I tell you now? Do you think like important, or is it just like just get them ready for the game? Quit complaining.
I think it does help to have those guys out there practicing with you, even if they're not going super hard. Getting a fit when you're going through the plays and everything, getting a familiarity with them. I do think that helps. There are some players who are now. I don't know exactly what context this comment was made in. Was it that they wanted him on the court? Was that they wanted him?
Yeah, I can't remember.
Be more active, like pulling guys aside and making little pointers.
No,
and stuff
I mean, I think it was more actually like being there in practice and competing. Is my recollection.
Yeah, that's interesting because it got you know, it is harder when a player can't practice and can only play in the games. I don't think there's any question.
Yeah,
especially when it's not just one or two practices, when it's an ongoing thing for a big chunk of the year. That gets a little difficult because you're putting in new plays and stuff, and you can't run them through, and you know what I mean. It just creates a little more of a friction, I guess, and not friction between players. I'm just saying friction in terms of having your team be kind of a well-oiled machine. And so I get that. I understand that. And it's tricky though, because when a lot of times, like when you get older players like that, you just don't want to burn the candle on practice minutes.
Yeah. Yeah. Or have him miss 2 weeks because his knees get sore or something like that. Young players, and I remember even at one point, granted, this will shock you, but I was not one of the best players on my high school team. But when I went into practice, I was thought of like, okay, I should be getting better. I should be adding skills. Like, when else am I going to try these skills out except in practice? But I was also like, well, I don't want to try anything new because I'm getting evaluated and there's no way I'm going to like break into more playing time if I'm trying anything new that I'm not already good at. So I would imagine that's something that young players kind of deal with as well. If like, hey, you know, I've really been working on my 3-point shot or something, like I want to take this in practice, but if I like do this and I'm not good at it, like coach is going to be like, oh, this guy's going to make bad decisions. He won't play me.
Or the coach is going to blow his whistle right away and say, don't take that shot. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's one thing if the coach is like, okay, I don't want you taking that. It's another thing if it's like, okay, you know, I've been working on like this dribble move. I'm going to try and like go behind the back and maybe I lose it or something like that. You know, maybe that's a little different, but yeah.
You know, that's an interesting perspective because I hadn't really thought about that. But yeah, it is sort of at any level, practice is sort of set up to kind of crush people who try that stuff if they're not one of the starters, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's like once you've established a role, then there's more tolerance for that stuff. So, I mean, maybe that's the thought, right? It's like you just do the things that you're really good at. That'll get you the role. And then maybe you can try to explore the studio space once you've gotten to that point.
Yeah, it's, you know, breaking into playing time is one of the hardest things for a young player. It's such a conundrum. It's something none of these guys has ever faced in their career before, basically, with maybe a couple of exceptions. And it's such a challenge to, because you're not gonna give game minutes to somebody who doesn't deserve them, and
right.
you sabotage your the rest of your team. But at the same time, like giving these guys the ability to break into that is so important. It's one of the real challenges of player development, I think, is how do you get these guys to the point of getting those game minutes, and what do you do with them before they're at that point?
When a player, I'm sure you probably had this happen at some point, either a player or maybe more often his agent would come to you guys and say, hey, like, you know, why am I not playing? I'm better than this guy. I should be playing. What would you tell him?
You know, typically they would go to the coach, though.
Yeah.
They wouldn't really come to us. Occasionally an agent would come to us and say, well, look, he's not playing much. You need to move him someplace else. And we'd be like, yeah, there's actually no trade value for this guy. So that's not going to happen. I mean, I've had that conversation multiple times. It's like, look, really? Like, what do you think is going to happen here? Where were we here? I'm sorry. Oh, yeah. When guys aren't play, they talk to the coach typically because they're interacting with the coaching staff every single day and they don't see us as often.
Yeah. So, I mean, would the coaches like tell you about that and like how they would try to manage that?
It would get back to us and, you know. Yeah. But that's, you know, that's life. I mean,
it's every basketball team has ever existed.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Every sports team for that matter.
Yeah. No, that's that makes sense. All right. Well, what'd you write about for The Athletic this week before we go?
You know, I wrote about the quarterbacks, actually, in keeping with the NFL divisional playoff theme. the 30 players who, for each team, are kind of the guy where they are the focal point of the offense and are making a lot of the decisions. And I wrote about it, and I focused on this kind of quarterback term because so many more teams are becoming more what our Seth Partnow called heliocentric on offense, where one player is doing a lot of the scoring and distributing. And a lot of times that player is not nominally a point guard. It's a 6'8 wing on a lot of these teams, or some of them it's even a 4 or a 5. You know, you look at Pascal Siakam in Toronto or Nikola Jokic in Denver. And I just wanted to take a look at these teams and their quarterbacks because I think when you look at it from that perspective, it tells you so much about those teams and how they're built and how they're set up to succeed or not succeed at the offensive end. And I ended up ranking them all 1 through 30, and it's all there on The Athletic.
All right. Well, thanks for listening. Let's get out of here, John. Looking forward to talking next week, of course.
Yeah, thanks everybody, and you can make sure you download us and subscribe on iTunes or Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. And we'll be back at this again a week from now and eliminate another team from the playoffs.